I'm Carol Hills in for Marco Werman, and this is The World, a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH in Boston. Russia still denies it, but it seems Russian military forces are actively engaged in combat inside Ukraine now. NATO has released satellite images that it says proves it. And the main pro-Russia rebel leader in Ukraine has acknowledged that at least 3,000 Russian soldiers, he calls them volunteers, have been fighting in Ukraine. So what is Russia up to? I'm going to ask reporter Charles Maines in Moscow to help us on this one. And Charles, what's the official line in Moscow about what's going on in Ukraine?
Well, the official line is certainly what it's been all along, that Russia has no role to play in Ukraine. Russian forces aren't on the ground there, although Russia has promoted attempts to, for example, bring humanitarian convoys and help regulate the situation.
Are Russians buying that story?
I think you're starting to see some cracks in this version of events at home. We've seen reports of soldiers being killed. We had there's been some unexplained burials of soldiers and paratroopers in parts of Russia. We've had Russians being taken prisoner by Ukrainian forces in Ukrainian territory, which has been hard-pressed to explain. And so you've kind of collectively, this starts to paint this kind of wider picture that, in fact, Russian troops are on the ground there.
Now, AFP is reporting a protest by Russian army wives who are demanding to know where their husbands have been deployed as these casualties mount. How has the Kremlin responded to those requests?
Well, they haven't responded yet, and it'll be interesting to see what happens further down the line. I mean, again, for example, with these soldiers that were taken prisoner in Ukraine, some mothers and family members went public through a recorded message appealing to Russian President Vladimir Putin, saying, you know, bring our boys home. And I actually spoke with the leader of the Soldiers' Mothers Committee. This is a well-respected and long-running NGO here in Russia. And, you know, she's saying that essentially what we're seeing, this kind of denial of Russian troops being killed or injured on the ground, goes into this long line that we've of tradition that they've seen in Russian wars and, for example, Afghanistan in the Soviet period and more recently in Chechnya.
Now, last week, President Putin issued a directive awarding the 76th Airborne Division the Order of Suvorov for unspecified heroism and bravery. How are Russians supposed to interpret what the heroism and bravery is for?
Well, again, I think it's part of this kind of disconnect between reality and spin that we've seen here all along. This is the same group of paratroopers where certainly we've seen some men were buried this week, and yet it's not clear quite how they died in the line of duty, and a lot of people might be questioning where and why.
What's your sense of what's really going on in Ukraine?
Well, I think that there are several versions of events, and it's hard to say exactly what's happening, but I think one thing that's clear is that, you know, this appears to be sort of a repeat of the Crimea scenario. This is when Russia, you know, de facto sent troops in but didn't acknowledge them for a long time to secure some kind of military aims. And the question is what those military aims are at this point. There are several competing theories, one of them being that this is to give essentially the pro-Russian separatists in eastern Ukraine some breathing room. They've lost ground against Ukraine's army in recent weeks. Another theory would be that this provides kind of a land bridge. Perhaps if Russia seized the southern part of Ukraine, this would give them essentially a land bridge over into Crimea, into the Crimean Peninsula.
Now, I'm curious whether Russians in general approve of this sort of not so subtle kind of intervention or not.
Well, I think it's a little early to say. I mean, there certainly have been a few surveys where Russians have expressed some reticence, certainly about the idea of sending Russian troops into Ukraine. But I think it's a little early to say whether they really get the message here, because, again, state media is really promoting this idea that, you know, Russia has no role here. Russia is a peacemaker trying to kind of bring the competing sides to the negotiating table.
What about Russian friends of yours? What do they say?
Well, again, it's mixed. I mean, I have Russian friends who think this is an abomination. They're horrified by what's happened here. But I also certainly have friends that we get in arguments over what's happening in Ukraine. I think there's this perception here that there's an information war. It's the word you hear constantly, that somehow everyone is spinning events to their liking and that the truth is almost unattainable.
Reporter Charles Maines in Moscow. Thanks so much, Charles.
Thank you.
While that information war is being fought inside Russia, over the border in Ukraine, the fighting is very, very real. For The View from Kiev, we reached Oliver Carroll, an independent journalist who's based there.
I suppose The general mood here is a gradual disillusionment with the romanticism which a lot of people once had for US and European countries. There's a sense that they've been hung out to dry. They were expecting more severe sanctions from the US and Europe, and they've come to understand that those aren't forthcoming. They don't particularly understand why. It's true to say that it's a pretty insular country as well, and that the understanding of the geopolitical realities driving, for example, European policy, recession, trade, their own security, they don't really buy here. Even the question of Crimea, you would say that for most diplomats, the issue of Crimea is already off the table. But for ordinary Ukrainians, the issue of Crimea and returning Crimea is still very much a burning one.
How are Ukrainians in Kiev and that part of the country feeling about their own president, Petro Poroshenko's leadership during this crisis?
It's a mixed reaction, of course. Poroshenko's in a particularly difficult situation because, unlike, for example, Russia, where presidential power is absolute and everything works through a power vertical, in Ukraine, what you can see is more like a power trinity. So you have three different sources of power. One is a corrupt oligarchy, which has been fairly balanced up until recently. The second is a very weak state, which Poroshenko's at the top of. And the third is civil society, which has really come to a fore during these last few months. And I think this is something which is quite new in the sense that the president has become as much dependent on civil society as anything. For example, there would be no functioning army were it not for civil society going out and buying the flak jackets, buying the helmets, buying the basic provisions of food, cigarettes, socks. I was in Lugansk back in April, and that's obviously the forefront, the bordering region with Russia. And we were visiting, it was the 80th Division out there, and they had been sent with nothing. They'd been sent with tanks and rifles, but that was it.
So you're saying that the Ukrainian government and the Ukrainian military is relying on civil society organizations to fund it and get their equipment and their basic food?
Absolutely. Even at the moment, there isn't 100% coverage in terms of flak jackets, even in the army. Without particular organizations, there's quite a few of them, Army SOS, Phoenix Wings. Without their activity, the situation would be dire.
I know you've been in touch with many activists who've spent a good deal of time in the Maidan protesting. What are their thoughts as this war and Russia's involvement seems to only get worse?
For most of us, even understanding a day at war is something quite hard to understand. But for these activists, they've been at war since the end of November. That has obviously sent some people over the edge, and it's worn most of the activists out. They obviously are looking at the possibility of a war which will at least go into the early winter. And they've already had one heave equipping the army for summer. But obviously, winter clothing is a different level. It's more expensive. And that's not something they're looking forward to, but they're already getting on with that task. Ukrainian activists, certainly, they've been through so much blood has been paid, that it's a very difficult prospect at the moment to see that part of Ukrainian society, which is actually quite a powerful and influential part of Ukrainian society, back down. It's quite difficult to see.
Oliver Carroll is an independent journalist based in Kiev. Thank you, Oliver.
Thank you.